If you are a subscriber to the Level Paths podcast, or if you minister in any capacity in the Appalachian region, you don't want to miss the Appalachian Ministry Conference at Tri-State Bible College, April 22nd and 23rd. This year's conference is a two-day event. The pre-conference starts on Monday, April 22nd at 6 p.m. with Dr. Andrea Clements and Tanner Clements from Uplift Appalachia. The evening will focus on equipping churches and faith-based organizations to serve as the tip of the spear, bringing solutions to the addiction and mental health challenges in Appalachia. Then, on Tuesday, April 23rd, author, church planter, pastor, and keynote speaker Dave Early kicks off day two of the conference, along with storyteller Tommy Reed, special sessions with Dr. Kevin Yingling, and music from Chosen Road. You can also choose from 16 breakout sessions that cover topics like church planting, engaging the next generation, leading the church from the pulpit, ministering with the Bible as your playbook, measuring leadership success with a plan, and much more. For more information and to register for the Appalachian Ministry Conference at Tri-State Bible College, April 22nd and 23rd, visit tsbc.edu.
I don't need teams to come here and feel sorry for us. We have enough pity. I want people to understand that we're doing this work 365 days a year. We want you to come in and join us in the work that we're already doing. And we believe if we create the experience that needs to happen here, that by the time that you leave here, that your life will be changed. And if what we're doing in Martin County can happen here, where God is doing amazing things in the mountains, then it can happen in your community. Because scripture says the poor you'll always have with you.
From Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute, this is the Level Paths Podcast. We're glad you've taken some time to join us. My name is Chris Weigel. As it pertains to missions work in Appalachia, there are three candidates: Appalachians who live there, people from outside of Appalachia, and people who left Appalachia but have returned. Dwayne Mills is of the last variety. He grew up on the Tug River in the hills between Kentucky and West Virginia, but it turned out that God was very clear when he called Dwayne back to Martin County, Kentucky, where he now serves as the executive director of Appalachian Reach Out. On this Level Paths podcast, Dwayne takes us through his journey out of and back to Appalachia, and his story explains what Appalachian Reach Out is all about. Here's Rex.
Welcome to the Level Paths podcast. My name is Rex Howe. I'm the president of Tri-State Bible College and co-founder of the Appalachian Ministry Institute with my partner and my brother, Dr. Matt Shamblin. Matt, it's good to be with you today.
Yeah, Rex, this is going to be an interesting podcast because as we're here talking with Dwayne Mills, he's going to be one of our speakers at the Appalachian Ministry Conference. Dwayne's got a key role here with Appalachian Reach Out, and we're going to talk about that. But just before we signed on, I found out, as I'm the pastor of Rose Hill Baptist Church, and we have a ministry, Rose Hill Christian School, Dwayne is a Rose Hill Royal from 1992. And so it is always exciting to talk to a Rose Hill Royal, especially a guy like Dwayne who's serving faithfully in ministry. Dwayne, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be with you all. Very honored. Well, here's just a little bit about Dwayne. He serves as the executive director of Appalachia Reach Out, or ARO, as you'll hear us referring to it in just a bit. Originally, he's from Inez, Kentucky. Dwayne and his family moved back to Martin County, Kentucky with his family in June 2012 after serving as Associate Dean of Students at Olivet Nazarene University. And his wife, Bethany, was the Director of Counseling and Health Services. Dwayne has served in full-time ministry since 1995. Now, ARO's mission is to be Christ's love in action through being his hands, his feet, his heart, and his mission each day, every day, in all they do. They serve those in Martin, Perry, and Pulaski County, Kentucky, and Nicholas County, West Virginia. They believe it's through their acts of kindness, goodwill, love, and support, people will come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. They've been ministering to the people of Appalachia since 1972, and they focus on three main areas: education, addiction recovery care, and work and witness. They believe that if they're going to break the generational chains of poverty, they have to impact children through education. Secondly, through addiction recovery care, they partner to bring those who have struggled with addiction from crisis to career. And lastly, They work to host work and witness teams, which are groups of people that come to serve on short-term missions projects in Appalachia. I mentioned Dwayne's wife, Bethany. They also have three sons and one daughter. He served in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and now in Kentucky. Dwayne says there's no better calling and place to be than in the center of God's will. He's excited to serve the people of Martin County and the surrounding areas. There's no better place to live than in the heart of Appalachia. Welcome, brother.
Thank you. It's great to be with y'all.
Well, we got a little bit of your background there, but tell us what it was like growing up in Inez.
You know, Inez is the county seat in Martin County. Martin County is just a small little county that's tucked away around four counties in Kentucky and then two counties in West Virginia, because we are right on the Kentucky-West Virginia state line. And there's a little community in Martin County called Turkey Creek. That's pretty much where I was raised. That's where my father was born and raised. And then my grandfather and granny raised all of their family right on the Tug River, right in the heart of Appalachia. And so, you know, growing up, it was mainly, of course, we're a lot more mobile today than we were back in those days, but you really lived in that community in the county. Yesterday, I celebrated my 50th birthday. So this has been a few years ago now. We actually had 8 elementary schools back in the day. And so now there's only 3 because of consolidation and all of those things. And so you really lived in those communities. And so our elementary school that went to 6th grade, and then the Nazarene church that sat there that my grandfather and both great grandmothers had founded, my father had come back to pastor. That's really all that we knew in community. And so we lived within that. We were poor growing up. I tell people all the time, there's a difference between being poor and living in poverty. And so we didn't live in poverty, but we were poor. But I had 2 parents that loved Jesus and pointed me to Jesus. And that was all because I had faithful grandparents, my grandfather, who came to the Lord at a later age in life and really changed the trajectory of our family for multiple generations, was very instrumental in the life. I don't remember my grandfather. He died of black lung. He was a coal miner, would board away in the coal mines of West Virginia, come home on the weekends and helped found the church and then help with pastoring the church and all of that. My granny raised 11 kids while he was away at work in the coal camp. I was 2 when he passed, but I remember my granny, very, very instrumental in my life, speaking into that. And so was really raised by my family and all of those community members that were part of that. But a great sense, and this is just an Appalachian culture piece, but a great sense of family and the richness and scope of family and the importance of family was instilled into my life. And so it wasn't just my parents raising me. It was my aunts and uncles and granny and all of them that was a part of that process. So that's just a little bit of living in Appalachia and being raised in Martin County, Kentucky.
Clearly, there's an incredible influence and legacy of faith there. How do you go from that to going into the ministry?
Well, there was a Clapboard Methodist church that sat right on Turkey Creek. Turkey Creek flows into the Tug River, which separates Kentucky and West Virginia. But that Clapboard Methodist church in 1950 was on the circuit. So once a month, the Methodist minister would come in, hold services, not be back until the next month. And my grandfather, with both great grandmothers and a few other folks, felt like there needed to be a holiness presence in our community. And so they actually went to Ashland, Kentucky, which back in those days was an all-day trip, and purchased that Clapboard Methodist Church for $175 and brought it into the Nazarene Church in 1950. And so now for the last 74 years, there's been over 30 people called into ministry out of that church. One of the things when I travel the country and speak and talk about rural poverty alleviation and the work that we're doing, one of the things I ask folks when I'm speaking is, are you willing to put your yes on the table and allow God to ask the question? In other words, are you really to put your money where your mouth is in your faith and your walk with the Lord? And so I tell people all the time, it was my grandfather's willingness to put his yes on the table and then allow God to ask the question. And he stepped in that direction and was a man beyond his time, to be honest with you, in the way that he saw things. And even though he only had a 5th grade education and learned to read by reading the Bible, it was those early formative years in my family's history that really impacted. And of course, my dad was one of 11 kids, the only one that went to school, felt a call into ministry after he served in the Air Force. And he would tell you it was the church, and this might sound wrong to some folks, but folks that live in Appalachia, they'll know what I'm saying when I say this. It was the church that kind of got him out of Appalachia to a certain degree, but also came back to give back to his community in that calling. So my grandfather and granny, my mom and my dad were very influential in that, in setting that tone, even though I had my wayward way of stepping away. But I had to get that sense eventually in my own life of saying, this is my faith. I had to make the decision to follow Christ and to answer that call into ministry, which was a journey in itself. For a year and a half, I ran from that call just because my parents were great as far as protecting me from some of the things that come up with being a pastor in a church. I have a great memories about being raised in the church, but I also knew that I wanted my own way. I wanted to do my own thing. And so, but the faithfulness of my grandparents' generation, and really my great grandmother's as well, so multiple generations, really spoke into that. Now that I'm 50 years old and look back into all of that, really important is the fact of parents raising their kids in a Christian home and that stabilization that's brought there, even though we were poor growing up, which was really, really meaningful for us.
You know, Dwayne, there's not a great difference between our ages. And I think about the time that we grew up in Appalachia and the difference now. We grew up in Appalachia, really, it was not at its peak economically. It was just starting down the hill. And so we were seeing what had been prosperity, a prosperous Appalachia, and we were seeing it starting to descend the hill. I grew up in a little town called Clendon in West Virginia, Clendon and Elkview. It's almost the same town. It's now, if you're from the area, it's absolutely not the same town. Right. But the petroleum industry, really what we see just moments from where I'm speaking, part of it anyway, originated in my little hometown. Well, early 1980s, that production facility closed. It had been there since the 1800s. It closed. And you can see a descent in our little community. You can see that change. I love what you said, the way you said that the church kind of took them out of Appalachia in a way, insulated and protected and gave guidance through that descent. My parents were divorced when I was 8 years old. And my mother, who had never finished high school, went on to get her GED and then purchased a house in Clendon in West Virginia. And it was the old Nazarene Church parsonage. Wow. And our mutual friend, Desmond Barrett, Desmond's a dear friend. Desmond listens to me preach every week. And he said, the only critique I would have is you need more holiness theology in your sermons.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he said, you need less of that Baptist stuff and more holiness stuff. And so here's a great story. A lady in our church, she's a business lady, and she cleaned out somebody's house or somebody's office. And she called and she said, hey, I've got some books from a pastor's office. I'd like you to look through them, and then what you don't need, take them to the Bible college. Six big boxes of books show up here at the church, and I look through them, and they're from a Nazarene pastor's office. And so I took a picture of one of the theology books, which is a holiness Wesleyan theology. I took this picture and sent it to Desmond, I said, you've been praying that I would become a Nazarene for years. And I said, and six boxes of Nazarene there pastor's books shows up. And here his response was, look at God. I just absolutely love Desmond Barrett. But, you know, it's incredible the impact that the Nazarene church has had in Appalachia. I know in my own life, those Nazarenes in Clendon and Church of the Nazarene use that as an opportunity to reach out to my family, this newly broken family. And I didn't even realize it at the time, the impact that they were trying to have on us and the seeds that God planted through them in my own life and in the life of so many people. So you came back to Kentucky with Appalachian Reach Out. So talk to us a little bit about your journey back to Kentucky. Sure. And then what is it that Appalachian Reach Out does?
Yeah. It's a radical callback for sure. It almost had to be for us. After I graduated from Rosehill Christian High School, went to Mount Vernon Nazarene University up in Mount Vernon, Ohio, met my wife there who was from Circleville, Ohio. And we started ministry there. Was in some ministry there in Ohio and then in Southern Indiana and Seymour, Indiana. And then she was working on getting her doctorate in clinical psychology and all of that. and then felt a call to go to Olivet Nazarene University. And she felt, and then I served on staff at College Church up there for a while, and then came across the road to Olivet Nazarene University. And so we had been living there about 6 years. And I tell people as I travel and speak this story, you know, it was beginning to finally feel like home. You take a boy out of Appalachian Mountains and put him just a little bit south of Chicago, and you might as well put him in a third world country somewhere. It's just a whole different world. And so it was beginning to feel like home for us. And we had just built the new Centennial Chapel there at Olivet, a wonderful school with rich history, and our oldest Nazarene University. We have 8 in USA Canada and the Church of the Nazarene. And so liberal arts, Christian college. I was in my role of Dean of Student Development, doing all of that. And on September the 6th of 2011, we had a good old Baptist minister speaking in our chapel that day. So there you go. Dr. Tony Campolo was our speaker that day. And he was telling about a student of his at Eastern University, their school there in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. Of course, now I know he was American Baptist, and that's different from Missionary Baptist, and I get all of that. So, but he was sharing about a student of his who had graduated from Eastern University, was a teaching education major, and had received a highly prestigious teaching position in the suburbs of Philadelphia. Highly competitive, hundreds of applications. And of course, if you know anything about Dr. Campolo, he's a very intermated Italian minister, young, I mean, he just gets into it. So I'm not even doing it justice, but he's telling the story of this young lady who comes back to tell him about the good news. And so they're sitting in his office, and she's so excited with this good news that she was one of 3 that was accepted into the school district. And in the middle of that conversation, she picked up on the fact that he wasn't as excited for her as what she thought he should be. Not that he wasn't tracking, but she knew something was off. And so she stopped in the middle of that conversation and she said, "Dr. Campolo, are you not excited for me?" And he said, "No, I'm happy for you." He said, "But my greater concern is this." He said, "There's over 200 open teaching positions in the inner city of Philadelphia where Jesus needs to go, probably in a more radical way. And the fact that you did not look there really challenges me as a professor. Am I really doing the job that I need to do in challenging my students?" And then he made this statement. He said, "Why would you be in a place where God could use anyone? Why wouldn't you go to a place that he could only use you?" And in that moment, the Holy Spirit breathed Martin County into my spirit. And so in that moment, on that Tuesday morning chapel, my world was turned upside down, because I'm thinking, what in the world does this mean? We had just had our 4th child, poor Emily. We have 3 boys and a girl. The academic year had just started. I didn't say anything to my wife that day. And so the next day was Wednesday. And in those days, we lived for 8 o'clock at night because that's when the kids go to bed. And those were the times where we could get some downtime and all of that. And so we did our family devotions and all of that. And I went downstairs and I turned off the television and I looked across the living room at my wife. Her name's Bethany. And I said, "Bethany, we need to talk." And she looked back at me and she said, "It wouldn't happen to be something that happened yesterday, would it?" And I said, "It is." And she said, "It wouldn't happen to be something that Dr. Campolo said in his message." And I said, "Yep, you nailed it again." And she said, "It wouldn't happen to be this. Why would you be in a place where God could use anyone? Why wouldn't you go to a place he could only use you?" And I said, "It is." She said, "God is calling you to Turkey Creek." And at that time, tears began to stream down our face. And I said, "I feel like there may be a call to our people, which is different than just the call to the church." And so at that time, my father had been a pastor and a district superintendent. I have both of my brother-in-laws are ordained elders in the Church of the Nazarene, and my brother is a ordained elder in the Church of the Nazarene. So our family, usually when we began to go through what I would call traumatic times like that, where God might be doing something, we're calling each other and saying, "Let's hold each other up in prayer." We said, "You know, we have to finish out this academic year. Let's not call anyone. Let's just begin to process through this." And so long story short, I can remember being seated at 835 Peony Lane in Bourbonnais, Illinois, where we lived, at our kitchen table. And I'm a type A OCD person. So I like legal pads and I like all the stuff color-coded, all of that. And so I was seated there trying to figure out the pros and cons, if we stay or if we go, because I believe there's times in our life that God calls us and he allows us to choose and he's going to be in whatever we choose. But I also believe there's times that he calls us very specifically. And if we don't say yes to him, then we're walking out of his known will for our life. So I'm trying to figure that out. And I remember the Holy Spirit saying this to me as I'm sitting there trying to do this. I remember him saying, "Dwayne, lay down your pencil. You'll never be able to figure me out at the end of a pencil." And so I knew then that God was doing a work in us to relocate us to Martin County. Now, a lot more things that happened during that time. And I remember coming and interviewing at the church because they were in kind of transition at Turkey Creek Nazarene. Knew that church was open. It was only one of two full-time positions in Martin County. The Baptist Church, First Baptist, is the only other full-time position. And I remember interviewing with them and telling them, this was a couple months later. And so they had to love me no matter what, because they're my family. So it didn't matter what I said. And so I was very transparent with them. And I told them, I said, to be honest with you, in the flesh, I have no desire to be here. And I said, actually, my heels are bleeding from where God has drugged me here. And I said, I'm trying to figure out, this is maybe my Abraham and Isaac moment. He's wanting to see if I'm willing just to be, to say yes. And then he's going to provide the ram in the thicket. We'll stay at Olivet because we have everything there at our fingertips. I mean, God had blessed and all of that. And so I thought, as I laid that out and I told our church board this, I said, God is calling us to work with people that will never darken the doors of our church. And yet we're still called to go and minister to them. So if you want a pastor who's going to come in here and only pastor the people that show up on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, don't call me. I mean, I'll minister and I'll pastor, but our call is to go out. I mean, that's what Jesus commanded, is to go. And so I said, so don't call me. Save you guys a lot of hassle. Save me a lot of hassle. But this is what God's calling us to do. And I thought for sure they wouldn't give me a call. And of course, long story short, again, they gave us a unanimous call to come. We moved in June of 2012, July of 2012. We started with our first work and witness team, and teams started coming in, 6 to 8 teams a year I'd bring in. I would lay my pastor hat aside and we would engage our community and we would host these teams in homes in our church, a little country church. So I'd find homes in our church to host those teams. And about 2 years into that partnership, we were pastoring, reaching our community in the hills and the hollers, doing home repair in the schools, engaging community, local government, all of that. If we didn't have enough volunteers to host those teams that came in, those extra folks would actually stay with the pastor and his family in the church parsonage. And so in the summer of 14, I'll never forget it, we had a team of 56 come in from Illinois, and we couldn't find housing for 26 senior high girls. And so those 26 senior high girls stayed in our home with our 6. That's 32. And they were great, but you put 26 senior high girls in your home for a week and let me know how it goes with a bathroom and a half at the end of that. And so I remember 2 or 3 days into that, I looked at my wife, and I know this is not correct grammar, but it works for Appalachia. And I said, if God wants us to continue this work, he's going to have to do something because this ain't working. And it wasn't long after that, that a couple from Appalachia Reach Out, a ministry that was started in 1972 by Miss Jo Boomsma, who was Christian Reformed out of Western Michigan. She would come in the late 60s in the summers in her 4x4 Jeep and go in and out of the hollers and minister to the kids who were behind. And in 1972, God radically called her to quit her teaching position and move to Martin County, Kentucky. And here comes this educated woman who was not married to Martin County in the heart of the Bible Belt in Appalachia. You talk about a radical call 52 years ago. She stepped out on faith and started ministry in 1972 here in Martin County and established Appalachia Reach Out. Now, you fast forward to 2014, us being here for 2 years, we had a couple that began to come to our church who are a part of the ministry of Appalachia Reach Out that our boys played soccer together. And they started coming. We had an active youth program. We had 3 vans. We were bringing in some of the most underserved in our community. We were bringing in 80 to 100 teens every Wednesday night and loving on them and ministering to them and feeding them and doing all of that. And they wanted their boys to be a part of that program. So they started attending our church. And once they saw we were bringing these teams, they said, you need to meet our executive director because we have places for you to house these teams on the campus of Appalachia Reach Out. And so that's what we started doing. And for 2 years, we did that. We found out the weeks that they didn't have teams coming in and we'd bring those teams in and we would serve our community. Well, 2 years into that partnership, I get a call from the board of directors out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, to come and meet them in a little suburb of Grand Rapids called Cutlerville, Michigan. Went and met them, sat with them. And at the end of our conversation, they looked at me and they said, Dwayne, what would you do? Because most of our board of directors are in their 70s and 80s, have served for a number of decades. Our executive director in a year or two is going to be retiring. And we don't really have a transition plan for the ministry of ARO. They said, what would you do if we gifted you the property, the buildings and cash assets for ministry? Would you be interested in that? And like any good husband whose wife was not with them, I said, I don't know. I need to go back and speak to my wife. And so we did, and we knew we had time. We had a year or two. And so we began to pray about that, what we would do. And through God opening and closing certain doors, it was in 2018 that we finally decided, yes, this is what God was calling us to. Because we knew if we said yes, this is probably where we'd be the rest of our ministry. We just knew that. Because our call is a call of longevity, definitely not brevity, in a lot of ways. And that's the part that really, I think, in Appalachia really hurts ministers, can hurt ministers, is because there's a missional kind of calling to Appalachia that's different than any other calling that I've had. And I've felt called to all the different churches I've ministered in. And you've got to have staying power to look back at when God calls you. And that has been, I've never been someone who journals, but in that time of trying to discern our call to come here, I journaled. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone back to the scriptures that God had given me, the conversations, the message that I heard, the songs that I heard during all of that time. And so in the fall of 2018, we knew that we were staying. And so in the Church of the Nazarene, we can become what's called a compassionate ministry center, which opens up the doors to the global church in a lot of ways. And I knew strategically that I didn't want all of our board members, as we transitioned the board, to be only Nazarene. So of our 9 board members, we have 5 denominations represented. We still have a couple of members who were on the board when we transitioned over 5 years ago. That was very strategic because of so much support for over years from the Reformed and Christian Reformed churches and all of that. And so in January of 19, I stepped out of the full-time pastorate, so 5 years ago, into the full-time role of executive director at Appalachia Reach Out, knowing specifically after being here for 7 years that education was a key part. We know if we're going to break the chain of generational poverty, it begins with a child. And so God has given us direct access into all of our public schools here in DeMarten County. I work with principals, just meeting with principals today in meetings with our resource directors. We have direct access in a lot of ways to our schools. When new addiction recovery, I don't know of a family in Martin County and really in Appalachia, if you've lived here long enough, whose family has not been impacted by addiction. And so knew that was a key point of the work that we would be doing. Now, we've added a third component in the last few years, and that is community engagement and leadership development. It's important in Appalachia that you engage in community. It's vitally important that you do that. And I think it's scriptural. I don't think it's anything that's special to the work that we do here in Appalachia. We just don't do a very good job of it. We kind of isolate ourselves sometimes as a church, and we lose sight of what God has commissioned us to do in our Jerusalem. We do a good job overseas, but in our Jerusalem, we've lost sight of that, especially in the church in the States. And so, and the fourth piece is short-term mission teams. I don't need teams to come here and feel sorry for us. We have enough pity. Being the place in 1964 where President came and stood on the Tom Fletcher front porch, which is literally a mile from our campus, and declared the war on poverty, we've had enough pity. I want people to understand that we're doing this work 365 days a year. We want you to come in and join us in the work that we're already doing. And we believe if we create the experience that needs to happen here, that by the time that you leave here, that your life will be changed. And if what we're doing in Martin County can happen here, where God is doing amazing things in the mountains, then it can happen in your community. Because scripture says the poor you'll always have with you. And so there are those pockets in the communities. It doesn't matter how rich the community is. There are those pockets wherever you're at to serve those folks. And so our ultimate goal is we bring in mission teams. We bring in teams on Saturday. They leave on Friday morning. Thursday night, I do a session on, so now what? What's your take home? You've been here. We don't want you just to come and get your spiritual check mark. But what is it that God has literally done in your life that you're going to go back and engage your community? That's really our heart and what we try to do. There's a lot more pieces to it. I know that's a lot of information there. But really, that's how God has kind of evolved our calling over the last 12 years, and he continues to open those doors in ways that I never thought were possible. You'd mentioned in our introduction, we opened a site in Nicholas County, West Virginia, 3 years ago. Perry County, we're developing that, just opened that. We have connection into Pulaski County, and to be honest with you, just got off a call a few minutes ago where we're working on sites in South Central Ohio right now.
So you've got a lot going on with Appalachian Reach Out. I mean, there is a lot. So I just want to kind of connect the dots and move us to give a preview of what you're going to be talking about at the conference. So you made this statement that you had heard, why go to a place where God can use anyone? Why not go to a place where God can only use you? What a statement. We've never said it that way, but that's the heart of the Appalachian Ministry Institute, is to equip Appalachians to impact Appalachia with the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's been many attempts in trying to combat as one author put it, America's enduring social problem, Appalachia. But what we're finding is that in order for Appalachia to be reached with the gospel, it's going to need to be reached with Appalachians. I mean, that is basic modern missiology, that we train Appalachians to reach Appalachians. That maybe we could say it this way: apart from Jesus, the help isn't coming. And so instead of looking for those from the outside to come in and give us answers, which we found again and again, that's only kind of caused the problem, and in some ways caused dependence. Now what we need to do is train Appalachians. The greatest evangelistic movement ever in Appalachia was through the Methodist Church training circuit riding preachers to impact that. And we even heard that a little bit today. You know, I think church historians tell us that churches generally go through a pioneering stage, a settling stage, and then those who get to enjoy the work of those pioneers and settlers, and then they're usually about a generation away from just forgetting what happened. I think now to engage Appalachians with the gospel, we would all like to come in and enjoy the work of those who have gone before, but I think we're past that now. I think that we're in a position of that work's been forgotten, and it's now time to put back on the work boots and get back out to pioneering. So at the Appalachian Ministry Conference, you're going to do a session on leading with hope in Appalachia. So, Dwayne, give us just a snapshot, a brief snapshot of what that's going to look like. We don't want you to share everything. We just want you to whet their appetites for what you're going to talk about.
You know, as I've been thinking about and praying on that, one of the things that I'm passionate about as I travel the country and speak and do all that and raise dollars, you know, as an executive director, that's kind of your main role, is raising dollars for the nonprofit. But I tell folks, there's been so much negative. For example, in Martin County, any major media market that wants to do a story on rural poverty since 1964, guess where they come? They come to Martin County. And so my thing is, I want to tell the good things of what is happening. And there are so many good things that are happening here. I mean, people that have been here for decades who could have gone, but were Christ-filled folks who said, I have got to stay home. I've got to be committed to this. One of my spiritual mentors right now, who is 83 years old, could have gone somewhere else. But for over 20 years, he led a prayer cell here on Tuesday nights and drew a 60-mile radius around Martin County to pray that God would do another thing like those great awakenings that happened. And we're seeing some of that take place because people are being called back to this part of the country. People that have not even lived here, even though I agree with you about Appalachians being called back home to Appalachia, I also believe he's calling people who are not Appalachian to this place as well, because there's interest, there's something that's drawing them there. One of the great things that I think gives us hope is, even though we have a lot of unchurched folks, like I think in Martin County, the last statistic I show, there's about 80% who self-describe them as not being connected to a local church community, but there is still that deep sense of faith, even within those folks. And so having the conversations, being open to the things of God, is common in a lot of our everyday conversation. It's not foreign to those folks, but if we don't do something about it now, we're going to lose that after so many generations. And so a lot of what I feel like I share, and it's kind of just the life that we live, is that there is hope in what God has called. First and foremost, it starts with his calling in our life, because as I said earlier, it's that gives us the staying power. But I literally, because of the faithfulness of God, we started 10 years ago, a little bit over 10 years ago when I was pastoring. I wanted our church people to pray a prayer that if God didn't show up, it would not happen. And so the prayer that we began to pray at 5 o'clock on Sunday nights is that God would obliterate the drug culture in Martin County, because at one time per capita, we were the worst county for the opioid crisis. And so we began to pray. And I have literally over the last 10, 11 years now, have watched the walking dead come back to life. I've got story after story after story. Actually, I'll share a video in my seminar of one of those stories. It's about a 4.5 minute video, and talk about the hope that has been giving back to that family. This dad, this son who we have prayed for, has been absolutely amazing. He now has gotten both of his kids back. He's working at Second Chance Auto, which is an enterprise that has happened outside of addiction recovery care, which most have heard of ARC now, that live in Kentucky, and the partnerships that have happened there. And so all of these things, and really to me, just that one story is enough for me to uproot my family and move back to see what we've been able to do with Johnny Dell. I'll see him tonight at Celebrate Recovery. He's fully active and involved in that. And it's just been amazing, but there's story after story after story. So those stories of hope, like I said earlier, I'm a type A OCD, and I'd love to say that we sat at a whiteboard and said, this is what it's all going to look like. But it's amazing when you say yes to God, how he shows up on the scenes, and a lot of things just happen organically. I believe there is structure. I believe all those things have to happen. But a lot of times we need to get ourselves out of the way and just follow God and his work. Henry Blackaby's book about experiencing God, know where he's working and join him in the work. So that's a lot about what we try to push and share and tell people. So a lot of those pieces we'll be talking about, sharing some of those stories. You know, the passage of scripture that talks about the one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom. And that's where we get tripped up a lot. We say yes to God and we start following him, but then we start comparing ourselves in a lot of ways. It doesn't matter if it's making the difference. If you're making the difference in the life of one or 1,000, it's still making a difference. Slow progress is not no progress. And sometimes that's just Appalachian culture is slow progress. And we all know that and we get that. And so, and I'm not a slow person. I like things to have happened yesterday. And so God has taught me a lot. And I still continue to learn a lot. So that's some of the things that I'll be sharing and talking about.
Well, that's exciting. You know, that was one of the leadership, I guess you could say, tactics of Abraham Lincoln. When he would want to lead in a certain direction or to communicate a point, he would start to tell a story. And they were stories that would help drive those points home. Sometimes, especially those who were wanting to kind of stand against him, it would drive them nuts. Oh, here he goes with another story. But those stories encourage and help let people know, hey, you can do this too. God's at work. And that's one of the things we try to highlight on our podcast is the different ways that God's at work across Appalachia. Dwayne, it's been great talking with you. And I can't wait to hear more at the Appalachia Ministry Conference. It's exciting. It's easy to kind of get in our own little ministry silos and only know what's going on in our little group. But it's exciting to know that groups that are kind of just outside of where we are, that God's at work too. It's great to have a different face to the Nazarene community than Desmond Barrett. I love Desmond, and I'm just picking on him. But Dwayne, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today.
Sometimes we may ask ourselves, what kind of missions work can I do? Well, recall what Dwayne said. Let God take care of the questions. Our job is to be open to what God has for us. We may not think we have the gifts necessary to minister, but God knows we do. Dwayne's story and the work of Appalachian Reach Out is part of the lineup this year at the Appalachian Ministry Conference at Tri-State Bible College, April 22nd and 23rd. You can register for the conference and learn more at tsbc.edu. Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute exist as a resource. And no matter what need you may have, Rex Howe and Dr. Matt Shamblin want you to reach out to them today. Rex Howe is the president of Tri-State Bible College. You can contact him by email at rex.howe@tsbc.edu. And you can reach out to Dr. Matt Shamblin at the Appalachian Ministry Institute by email, matt.shamblin@tsbc.edu. The Level Paths Podcast is an outreach of Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute.